Good evening, everybody. Good to see you. Thank you for being here. This is an exciting topic, a fun topic. I have never given a class on this topic before. It's the first time. But I do have a rule, which is that I don't like to speak about topics that I don't have experience with. So, my goal with giving these medical ethics classes is not that I just, read an article and then kind of regurgitate it to you. I'm trying to share with you only information that I have hands-on experience. And this case, it's pun intended, that I have experience with. So let me give you some background about why this became a question for me. And then I'll tell you about why it's also a very current question, not just in my experience. And then we'll study some of the sources. Some of them we'll do a little in-depth. I'll show you some really important sources. Some of them I'll just mention outside. I'll kind of give you what my conclusion was, and then we'll have a discussion. Here's why I have a question. So for those of you who don't know me, I pretty much know all of you, but so I serve as the rabbi at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, as a director of the spiritual care department, which is a department that's not just Jews, right? We're not only there for Jewish patients, obviously. And sometimes I'm asked questions that are not just the typical question that a rabbi of a synagogue is asked, but something that, it's really sort of policy and requires a little bit of broader thinking. So one of our chaplains, she happens to be a Christian chaplain, is also a Reiki master. If you don't know what Reiki is, don't worry, because I'm going to tell you all about it. She's a Reiki master, and she came to me one day, and she says she would like to start practicing Reiki at the hospital. Our department should offer Reiki. Now, it was the first time I heard of Reiki when she said that. But I was a little bit nervous about it when she mentioned it. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a Jewish hospital. And as a rabbi, I understand it's not necessarily happening. First of all, we're a Jewish hospital, but we don't require everyone to behave in any kind of specific manner according to any religion. But still, as a rabbi, is this something I should be encouraging, discouraging? Should I make sure it's not happening to Jewish patients? What should my policy be? So I realized I needed to do some research about this to determine, from my perspective, as the director of our department, should we be allowing this? And then it's going to get more specific. One thing as a policy decision in a Jewish hospital, and then more specifically, what about me as a rabbi? Should I be receiving it, performing it? Is this okay? And how does this relate to the much broader topics of alternative medicine? So let's talk about Reiki for a second, because that had to be the first thing. I needed to do some research. I knew nothing about Reiki. I'd heard the word a few times, and that's about it. Reiki, let me tell you the story. How about I'll do it this way? I'll tell you the story. There's this Dr. Mikao Sui. He lived in Japan, actually almost exactly 100 years ago. Exactly 100 years ago. And there's actually different versions of this story, but I'll tell you the mainstream version that I had heard, and then I researched, I saw most clearly. He was a professor, a teacher, in a Christian seminary. And when he was teaching some of the stories in the Bible to his students about people in the Bible who miraculously cured people, his students, we never asked this in rabbinical school, but the students said, "So when do we get to learn how to do miraculous cures?" And he responded, "I don't know. I don't know how to do them." And he's one of these people who took it very seriously, like, how am I teaching seminary students about the Bible when I don't know how to do the things the Bible teaches about? So he decides, I need to take a sabbatical, some time off, and do my own research on how to cure people, how to do miraculous cures and help people with their ailments through, religious, miraculous, spiritual means. So he ends up in a Buddhist monastery. So I'm giving you all this religious, it's important background, because we're going to be discussing this. He ends up in a Buddhist monastery or with Buddhist monks on a hilltop meditating and thinking about, how to align himself or spiritually purify himself or achieve a light enlightenment such that he can cure people as happened with some of the figures in the Bible with his hands. And after some time up there, in fact, there was a certain point where he was fasting for 3 weeks, And he achieved a certain amount of what he felt was enlightenment. And he felt like he kind of had a little bit of an understanding about how to help people better. So he's also very hungry. So he decides to walk back down the mountain into civilization. And while he's walking, he trips. And he sprains his ankle. And like anyone would do when you trip and hurt your ankle, he grabs his ankle. He grabs his injury. And voila, the pain went away. As he's like thinking about the things he learned on the mountaintop. So he starts thinking to himself, have I just uncovered the secrets? I have a healing power. So he says, I don't know. I need to get something to eat. I'm very hungry. Maybe I'm hallucinating. He goes down and there's one of these little vendors on the street when he gets down into the city. And as he's going to buy something from the vendor's daughter is crying because she has a toothache and they're too poor to go to a dentist. And her whole cheek is swollen. And he says, oh, poor girl. He asks the father, would you mind if I touch her? So he says, okay. So he touches her face gently, right on the wound. And she kind of, loosens up. He says, does it hurt anymore? And he says, voila, I have it. I have achieved this ability to cure, to heal with my hands. So he begins going out throughout the villages and almost like testing it, even going into hospitals. And he's curing people with his hands. For some years, he didn't really share this. He had one student that he began to teach, and they had another student who moved to Hawaii. And in Hawaii, she began teaching this trade. And she spread it to something like 20 different students, and it began to spread throughout the world that way. In fact, there's a tradition in Reiki that it has to go from teacher to student. There's a masora. There's a smicha, even. They put their hands on the previous student, and there's a Reiki master today can trace their Reiki lineage back to that original teacher through this woman who came from Hawaii. She was the one who spread it. The certain symbols that they teach, and they're able to do this Reiki techniques based on what they learned from him. So that's Reiki in a nutshell. The words Reiki, Rei means like spirit, soul, spiritual, and Ki, like Reiki, means Chi, energy. So that's because this was the Reiki. That is what the Reiki, that's what he achieved in his time on the mountaintop. So the question is going to be, is this permissible for someone who's Jewish to engage in this therapy? I try to tell the story in the most accurate way possible. We have a Christian seminary teacher who was meditating in a Buddhist monastery, and he went around doing these cures and then teaching and then passing it on these symbols. So now the question is this permissible, a permissible intervention? Now, I'm going to focus on this because even though I put in the title of the talk, Reiki, energy healing, that's the same thing, and alternative medicine, there's so many types of alternative medicine that let's focus on this one for tonight, but it'll bring us to lots of different discussions. So the first thing I thought of, and I'm going to tell you a few things before we jump in, but when I was first asked, can we provide Reiki at Cedar Sinai? And then I learned this story about how this doctor achieved this Reiki vision and ability to cure with his bare hands. The first thing that I thought of, the first source I thought of, and I had to review it, was what you have in the front of your handouts there. Before I was even researching the issue, there's this famous story about Rabbi Soloveitchik that Rav Schefter tells in Nefesh HaRav. The story goes as follows. It says about hypnotism. They wanted to know, is hypnotism as a therapy or an intervention or even for fun, is it allowed? So the Rav gave a famous answer. That was what I was thinking of. They write, Sho'alura l'Rabbeinu im mutar l'hapil adam tachat kesem hypnoti. Can you put someone under a magic spell, a hypnotic spell? Shelo l'shem refuah. Not for the sake of healing the person. Ela l'shem tzchok l'etzon ablam, just for fun. V'ana Rabbeinu shedavar ze asur. Rav Soloveitchik said, forbidden. Why is it asur? V'shuv shogu al tam ha'isur sheyesh b'zeh. So they wanted to know, why is it not allowed? Sounds like fun. Sounds interesting. What's the prohibition? V'shivam rabbeinu shadavar zeh shtusi, and they put the parentheses, stupid. It's stupid. It's us to be stupid. It's us to act foolishly. So the Rav Soloveitchik said, you can't do this. What's the prohibition? Is it idolatrous? Is it... No, it's just stupid. It's foolish. We're, you know, think about it. Also, who's talking here? Rabbi Soloveitchik, from, you know, the most intellectual lineage and empire of the intellect. And he's like, come on. We're not supposed to be engaging in silly things. So then they asked him, okay. He said, Asur lehitasek b'devarim shel shtus. Not allowed to engage in things that are stupid. Because they amar abeinu b'kesher l'mashanog etzot. Ela shalom din chachmat karate. So they said, what about karate? How about karate? That's not stupid. Karate is self-defense. But what about this question? Shebetchilat ha-course mishtachavim ha-talmidim kalapi amora. The beginning of the course of karate, you bow, right? You bow to the teacher. Some people might have thought, are we allowed to bow? Is that, maybe it's not idolatrous. I don't worship the teacher. It's just respect, like a handshake. So he wrote, ve'ein b'zeh mishum kabalt elokus. O derech avodah zarah, it's not, you know, idol worship. Elastam minhag shtus ba'alma shenokein. But the Rav said, it's shtus. Zecher the derech eretz hanohug ben mizrach harachok, the way they act in the Far East. Ukesholu rabbeinu al-katz, so they asked him. Amalhem she'asur la talmidim lishtachavos. They said, no, students, you cannot bow in karate. Ukesholu shuv, they asked him, why not? Halo ein b'zeh shum chashash avodah zarah. There's no idol worship there. El shem minhag shtus ba'almahu. It's just a custom. Eshivam de ena chinami, even so, mihai taimahu de aser lan li sasek, but pu'ulos, uvan hagos, shel shtos. We can't behave in silly ways, and so you can't bow before crying. That was what Rav Soloveitchik answered. In fact, I heard this story for the first time, I think actually right around this exact spot in Mincha, between Mincha Marv one afternoon. Anyways, that was the first thing I thought of. But as you can imagine, as I told you the story about, this Dr. Matsui, how he came to Reiki, this Christian seminary professor who's meditating in a Buddhist monastery, and he achieves the ability to heal with his hands. You can imagine that there might be some more concerns. So before we jump in, let me tell you also about what's going on in the world today, in case you're not aware, because this is hot right now. Literally hot. I'm about to show you three books I have with me that all came out within just in the past few months. Brand new, hot off the press, because this is a raging issue right now. So, Eastern medicine, alternative medicine, energy healing, this type of stuff has become very, very popular in the ultra-Orthodox world, in the Haredi world, in Muncie, in Lakewood, in Yerushalayim. It's actually becoming very popular. And there are some concerns about it, because there are people who are... It's not just something interesting to try. It's for some people part of an overall mistrust or lack of sophisticated, I don't want to say not sophisticated, but lack of respect or recognition of modern science. So it's become very popular for many. And many rabbis have been advocating for it. And there's been a lot of debate about the appropriateness of it. So recently this book came out. This is a book called Alternative Medicine in Halacha. It's a big, thick book. Rabbi Rafal Smirla. I personally haven't heard of him. I have heard that he is a big rabbi in Lakewood. He actually starts off the book with 20 haskamas, letters of recommendation from the biggest rabbis. The biggest rabbis in Israel, from the chief rabbis, Sephardi rabbis in Lakewood, in Yerushalayim, in B'nai Brak, in Philadelphia, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky. The biggest names, in fact, the haskamas are so important, I can see that my edition, when it arrived at my house, I can see they even glued on another one. Someone glued in another one. Like, they really wanted, it's like after they published it, more came, and they wanted to get it in there. So this book was published. It's available, though some have banned this book. And this book advocates for alternative medicine in halacha. It's in favor of it. So much so that, it's personally, as I read it, on the one hand, you can tell, the author is a brilliant scholar. He knows his stuff. Both Talmudically and about alternative medicine modalities. He's familiar with it. He knows what he's talking about. But it also reads, from my perspective, as a bit of a polemic. He's trying to prove why it's lab, or and why it's sometimes even why it's good. You feel an agenda when you read it. He also, I should mention, as I researched him, he is an anti-vaxxer. He does not believe in vaccinations. So that, for me at least, already makes him a little bit suspect. Okay, this book came out. First, it came out as a Hebrew-only book. It's about half Hebrew. First came out in Hebrew, and then immediately there was controversy. And a lot of books I happen to have in my own library, but a lot of books came out in response, attacking him. I have one here, Ole Yaakov, that just came out. This is from Rav Yaakov Yosef Taub in New Square, arguing against all of his points, trying to delegitimize alternative therapy and why people should engage in traditional medicine. More recently, just now, came out a book, Rabbi Chaim Yisrael Levi Belsky, Rabbi Belsky from Tor Vadas. He died. So this is really mystical because he just wrote a book. Not joking. But his children and his family, knowing how strong his feelings were about it and how he had written about it in his life, decided because this was becoming so popular that they needed to publicize their father's teachings on the matter, and oftentimes referring directly to this book. This just came out where they, in English this time, because he wrote it also in English, tried to dispute what was written in defense of alternative medicine. Rabbi Belsky also, by the way, will say he's not known for being like an extremist or a real, you know, kanoi, as they say. He was also very familiar with modern science and medicine, very familiar. And he really takes a hard line. It almost feels polemical in the other way, but I say that with a grain of salt, because if Rabbi Belsky says something, I have a certain amount of respect and acceptance of what he says. And he takes a very hard stance against this. So what we'll do right now is I'm going to share with you the arguments back and forth, both sides. And obviously, it's not just these three. These three are quoting other poskim, other great rabbinic leaders. And so I'll share with you what they say, what the main issues are, and we'll conclude with that. So you get, and of course, I'll answer my question. Did I permit Reiki at Cedars-Sinai for our department, spiritual care, to officially provide Reiki? Did I become a Reiki practitioner? And there might even be others in this room who I won't out, but I'm just saying, is this something that that we advocate, that we don't advocate? What are we going to do with this? So let's see what the sources are. You have your sheets here. You're going to see why I mentioned this piece about Rabbi Soloveitchik before, because it's going to come up again. So just turn, let's actually go, I'm going to give you a quick tour of the reasons those, particularly these two books, Rabbi Belsky and Rav Taub, particularly why these two were so upset about Reiki, what they wrote, and then we'll see the other side and then the middle. So let's just jump to page 4. You see on my bottom here, I wrote in page numbers. It's not totally accurate, so don't count the pages. Just look at my numbers, and don't try to ask me any mathematical questions. As you'll see, in my world, 4 comes before, you know, before 2, and then 7 comes after 9. It's all a mess, but just look at the page numbers, and you'll be fine. So on page 4, here's we have some of the ideas. I'll read to you some of what Rabbi Belsky says. I'm sorry, usually I try not to do so much reading, but I wanted you to really get a feel for some of the arguments here. So he writes, you see I put this big line there, page 4. He says, if these practitioners, you know, he tells a story here, because he got calls a lot. Like I said, in the Haredi world, this has become very popular. So he was getting calls a lot from people saying, Rabbi, can we do this? And when he would say no, they would start telling him stories about, we heard that the Rishna Rebbe, he did it. He allowed it. So what do you say? So then he writes here, if these practitioners do, in fact, possess any power to bring about a similar effect, like you told me this Hasidic Rebbe did, which is extremely doubtful, it is surely rooted in tuma, impurity, darkness, and foolishness. This is what they transmit to others. Would it not be better to remain physically infirm, you know, sick, than to allow oneself to be spiritually tainted by whatever impure energy it purports to have? The side effects of a forbidden cure are infinitely worse than the sickness itself. Amazingly, the Reiki practitioners find some kind of acceptability in all places. However, I have looked through their literature, and once again, it is filled with terminology of Avodah Zarah, idol worship. All their stuff is taken out of Vedic literature, Indian literature, and the like. He goes on, page 5. The answer is, you know, when they say, well, you know, we won't, okay, so we won't mention the idolatrous aspects of it. We'll just do the healing parts, which I'll explain a little more in detail soon. But the healing parts, which basically, maybe I didn't give enough detail. Basically, the way Reiki looks is that it's, imagine like it's a massage, but fully clothed. And the person, you know, lays down on like a massage table or a bed. And the practitioner, you know, tries to create a relaxing environment. And asks, you know, gets to know the person, asks what they're experiencing, what kind of healing they're in the mode for, spiritual healing, you know, anxiety, physical pain. And then the practitioner places his or her hands on the person or keeps them slightly above. There are some who do it distance even, like long distance. Like you could be in, you know, Russia and I'm in Los Angeles. They're doing, okay, that's a more, you know, that's one form. But the typical form is, they place their hands on or near the person, different parts of their body, and then as they do it, they also make little symbols, which are the symbols of this doctor that I mentioned before that came to his mind when he was meditating in that story, and these are like healing symbols. Okay, so that's what's happening, right? So let's say there is some idolatrous aspects to it, but they're saying to Rabbi Belsky, but we'll just leave out the idolatrous aspects and we'll just recreate the ambiance and help people to relax. So he says, the answer to this is that a Jew may not use anything that was even created from a deceitful source, which includes even missionaries. Who can rely on his understanding to judge and clarify which action to accept and which to shun? It has all come out of one source, tuma, impurity, and practice as one interconnected unit. Who will dare to try to separate the tahor, the pure, from the tameh, from the impure? He goes on, Rabbi Belsky. Now we turn to page, well, there's no page number here because it got cut off in the copy machine. But on the top, it's 22 and 23. You get the gist. He goes on. All of the above are matters of very severe prohibitions of idolatry or other prohibitions combined with idolatry, such as sorcery, divination, omens, or possession of false opinions resulting from idolatry and heresy, each according to the subtle differences between the various methods. Though the medical practitioners of these methods have learned their trade and specialized in their ways under separate and unaffiliated names, really they are all derived from the same rotten source. Each boasts their virtues of their unique practice and special way, which, according to their respective gurus, surpasses all others. Sometimes these practices result in a cure, and for this very reason, they are alarmingly reminiscent of real Avodah Zarah. I have looked through their original material. It is filled with Avodah Zarah. It is filled with discussions of life forces that surround the person, the vital power, energy force that lies within. It's filled with terms taken from Indian Vedic writings, from Taoist writings, from Buddhist writings, the ideas and concepts that the Dalai Lama preaches. Taoism and it's real ancient Avodah Zarah. It has what they call life systems, in which they worship a certain life force and that they say is the originator of everything alive. It's a substitute kabayacho for a kadosh baruch hu Hashem Yirafe. So it's like replacing God. It's idolatrous. It's really bad stuff. He has a little bit more to say on it. If you turn now to the next page, which is ironically previous page 28 and 21, but you get what I mean. It's not an order because he gets one more problem that he has with it. So you see now his big problem is this, the source of it. And now he gives another problem. What's that problem? Here on page 20. The types of healing methods associated with the above are based on a principle called universal energy. According to its false comprehension, this force, this universal energy, extends from one end of the world to the other, surrounds every living creature with a special aura, and here's the problem, he really has his big problem, and has a separate mind and independent will with the ability to benefit or cause harm. May Hashem save us from this false theory. Right, so now we get to the real big problem. You see now at the bottom of the page where I wrote, right, I put the little line. Among those who believe in controlling this energy are the vast majority of idol worshippers, past and present, including those who employ sorcery and magic, most opinions emanating from the Far East, included in this 90% of the New Age practitioners who have made tremendous waves of interest in the world, even amongst the most ultra-Orthodox of Jews. These practitioners are divided into a number of areas of faith. Some people have practiced their craft in the same way the original worshippers of the Baal and Asherah did. Real Avodah Zarah in its truest form. So that's Rabbi Belsky's complaint. This is idolatrous from an idolatrous source and of an idolatrous belief that it is like, it's like worshiping this energy source, and it's a form of actually worshiping idols. And this is the type, this is similar to the argument you find in this Ohel Yaakov from New Square. Now you go to page 9. Just show you a couple more arguments, and then we'll say that I'll show you the other side, and then I'll discuss a little bit. So you see the little stars I put? Now see page 9 on the bottom there? So the star, he says, Kishayyadeh is bonus, but energia kvali, this universal energy. They think that they're bringing down energy. They are actually bringing down a god. That's what we'll explain. So now look where I put this little star. You'll see all this stuff is going to come up. This is going to lead to the discussion. He writes there, Afila rov hamon ama nachri. Many people believe in this stuff. Belaglagim al musag energy kishtuyot. Most doctors make fun of this, that this is shtuyot, like Rav Soloveitchik said. It's just shtuyot, it's silliness, this energy healing. Ki af mechar madai be'olam, not a single intellectual survey, what's the word?
Investigation.
That's the word I'm looking for. Research. Not a single research has validated this. Shum makor b'teva l'shita shal refua al yidei energia. Amnam nirsh refua al yidei energia. Meboseset bedat v'lo bedat. Meaning it's based in religious belief, not in knowledge. So, not good. It's just fake. No one believes in this stuff. He goes on. I'll just read to you in this next paragraph, one line there. You see, it starts, the line starts with Hala, and he says, "Hamakor yachidi l'hamin shayach nitrape al yedei koach zeh." The only way you can believe in this, shal energia, hu ach v'rak be'munat datiyut hu be'ikram mimizrach harachok. It's only through some kind of mystical, spiritual, religious, not a Jewish religious belief, idolatrous belief. And he says that it's actually, this phrase energy is a tirgum shoshem sha'alil shegoyim ovdimoto arayom. It's actually a god that some people worship. He actually gets a little bit more extreme here. If you turn the page, look what he says here. And you could, some of you could get very wealthy for having attended this class based on what you're going to see here. Watch this. On page 10 there. So on the bottom of the page there, sorry, this is a little bit smaller, he says, Boer al pia seichel. There's no intellectual, there's no logical explanation for this, natural explanation. There's many rabbis, many Jews who do this, and they think, no, there is a real source for this energy healing. We're going to get to that. All of this we're going to get to. Refuot alternativiot, people that ask alternative medicine doctors, or refuot holistit, right, holistic healers, or pashut refuot ayadei energia, they're called energy healers. Ulhalan nirish imamsit shitot eile ba'atzma modim sheashitot mebosot b'makor b'deot datiot sheheim maleot musagim shel minut ukfira. And they'll all admit that their medical practice is based in spiritual, religious, non-logical, idolatrous practices. Now look at this. Last piece of opposition, and then we'll look at the other side and we'll discuss. Look what he says here. Here's where you can get rich. If you really want to do some homework tonight, you can leave here. Well, look, I'll show you. He says, this middle paragraph there, Ein shum makor b'yahadut. In Judaism, there's no source, le'mor sheyesh koach shel energia l'refuot, to say that you can heal people through energy. If you want to say, oh, remember Elisha? There was a child that had died, and he resuscitated him and brought him back to life. He says, you know, that's just trying to read things into the Bible, and that's not a proper way to read the story. He says, and he says, the truth is, Me'ein Rayon Zeba Be'emet, where did this idea come from? Is it from nature? The main point is this, the bottom of the paragraph. Ein shum mecher madai shemochiach sheyesh bechlap koach shenergia shekayim beguf anoshi. There's no studies that have shown that there is such a force. Yesh afilo goy achad. There's even one person who's not Jewish. Shemamsi l'shalem $1 million. He says, I will pay $1 million. L'mishu sheyachol ochiach sherefut eli yachol v'impol shum davar. You can prove that these do anything. So if any of you want to take some time to do some, you know, some kind of study or something, you'll make $1 million, according to this person who wants to prove it false. So pretty strong antagonism towards this practice, no? I mean, there's more. We're not going to go through all of it. But you see, like on page 11 here, he specifically calls out Reiki. And he points out exactly what we said before, that Reiki is, he says, it's actually one of the easiest to prove that it's problematic. It's achat mi'ashito tanefutso biyoter b'olam ha-charedi. It says Reiki has become very popular in the Haredi world. Amnam, shita zu shabam medinat Yapan, this thing from, this idea from Japan, it's easy to prove that it's from Avodah Zarah. Look at the name, Reiki. It's implying, you know, that the Rei is spirit, is spiritual. And then you look a little bit down, he says, and also the fact that they think that this has to be like, there has to be like a ceremony where you pass it on, and that it's so spiritual, it's clearly idolatrous and highly problematic. You look on page 12, there's more, really the same kind of arguments. So a lot of rabbis, now you've seen it, you've seen their words, a lot of rabbis are not happy about this. Kind of seems like it's done, no? I mean, is there anything to talk about now? So I'm just, you know, keep you in my mind. You know, I'm going to keep you in my, stay in my place. So, again, I have this chaplain who works for me, who is a Reiki master, and she wants to know, as the director of the department, can I allow our department to, as an official offering of the spiritual care department at Cedars-Sinai Jewish Hospital, provide Reiki? Should we be providing Reiki? And she is, because she's a master now, she has her smicha directly back to, you know, Japan originally, can, and she can train the other chaplains. Should we be providing this? So I begin to research. I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik's story, stupid, shtus, aser. I start to find these books, research them a little bit. They're not too happy about this stuff. How's it looking for, should we allow this, shouldn't we allow this? Yeah, it's not looking good. But I'm intrigued by one thing, especially here. Both Rabbi Belsky and Rav Taub, I mean, they both pointed out that many Haredim are doing this. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, just because Haredim are doing this, it must be that it's good. But I do, there's got to be more to say. I mean, how has this become so popular in the Orthodox world? And there must be those who are defending it. And of course, you know, I knew about this book, which just takes one extreme. I know about a lot of rabbis. There are a lot of rabbis who defend it. I know a lot of Chabad rabbis who are defending these types of, not to the same extreme, now they're not anti-vaxxers, but, you know, interested in alternative medicine. And I know a lot of people support it, so I start thinking, well, we need to hear their side. Let's hear their argument, right? Let's hear what they have to say. So let's do that now. Let's see the other side. What's their response? How do they defend this? Why do they think it's a good idea? Because I think we're going to have to say a little bit more than just how do you defend it. You know, how do you say, why, not just why is it not evil? It has to not just be not evil, right? It should. Let's see, do they argue that it's actually good? Is it a good thing, Jewishly? So let's see what their argument is. So let's go to page 13 first. That's the next page. That's logical, no? So this is Rav Smirla himself, in part of his response, in his words. And I'll get to, let me just be clear as I'm going through this, that I'm showing you two sides, and then I'm going to have something to say about it too. And we're going to come to a, so let's just keep, remember, we're just trying to, you're just examining two sides of an issue right now. So he first of all, points out something that, you know, his first argument is the things that they're saying in the opposition to energy healing, Reiki, his argument is, you know, they're misunderstanding it. This is, by the way, part of what got him into trouble, because especially someone like Rabbi Belsky to say, oh, you misunderstood, first of all, it's a little somewhat disrespectful, and also Rabbi Belsky is someone who is known for researching before he said something. But on the other hand, there's a lot of types, all these things, like everything in the world, is nuanced. There's many forms of Reiki, there's many forms of energy healing. So if you hear about the worst kind, you know, the most extreme, does that mean it's all like that? So his first argument is, you're misunderstanding. Look at the top, this is page 13, but it's page 28 in an actual photocopy. So he says, in reality, this contention, he's referring to the contention that it's like a god, the energy is like a god, and that as when we practice it, we're worshiping the energy of the person, and that's really idolatrous. He says it's simply mistaken. For even if this chi, remember chi is energy, was viewed as a deity, the act of hands-on healing is not an act of worshiping that deity. That's what we're trying to do. Even if I have godliness in me, the Reiki practitioner is not trying to worship that godliness in me, right? Nowhere in the healing arts literature does one find any mention of hands-on techniques as a means of appeasing or serving the chi. Rather, they are clearly described as technical means of manipulating the chi. This is the energy, trying to calm the energy. A healer behaves towards chi not as a servant towards his master, but as a master over his servant. If a healer would in fact perform some action intended to appease the chi and convince it to heal, this would undeniably constitute an act of worship. However, the process of energy healing does not include appeasing the chi in any way and cannot be viewed as a form of avodah zarah. Right? He quotes Rabbi Belsky in the footnote, footnote 8 there. He says, Rabbi Belsky said, this is actual idol worship, and he responds there, although the performance of such an act would unquestionably constitute avodah zarah if it happened the way Rabbi Belsky described it, he says no such protocol exists in hands-on healing. Rabbi Rav Belsky has based his opinion on the fact that various therapies require obtaining energy permission, but in reality, this practice is entirely unrelated to idolatry, as we will explain. So that's his first response. That this chi, this force within us, is not a God force. It's an energy that everyone has, and everyone has energy, and the healer is using these incantations, because that would make it idolatrous. But they're trying to, they're just trying to heal a person. It reminds me, I think I've told somebody the story, because if they would be doing incantations to the healer on you, like, oh, you know, energy, heal this person's arm, that's different. It reminds me, and I think I told some of you, so when I lived in Israel for the year, when I was in yeshiva there, there was on King George a Chinese food restaurant that I loved to go to. It was the best kosher Chinese food. And I went there all the time. And one day I showed up, and you know, I guess as I walked in with a yarmulke and tzitzis, and someone said to me, you know, hey, Bacher, this place isn't kosher anymore. You don't eat there. So I was like, what do you mean? My favorite restaurant. How isn't that kosher? So he says, oh, you didn't hear what happened? So I said, what happened? He says, yeah. So what happened was, someone was complaining about something in the kitchen. The mashgiach was in the kitchen one day, and he's watching everything to make sure everything's kosher in there. And he notices that the chef would cook the food, and then sometimes the waiters would be like, quick, give me the food, I gotta bring it to the table. But before he would give it to them, he would like do a thing and then give it to them. And every time it would happen. And he started to watch this. Why does he do that every time? And he looked closer and he sees there's a statue of a Buddha right there where he was doing it to. So he says to the chef, can I ask you what you're doing? He says, yes, I offer all of my food to my God. It's an offering. It's like a sacrifice. If you guys had your sacrifices in your temple, the food is my sacrifice. It's my religious sacrifice to my God. So the Mashiach said, that's it. You're not kosher anymore. We're closing this place down. It's not kosher. So it's an interesting story. I was like really hungry, but also sad. But it's interesting that it makes a difference. The fact that he's Buddhist doesn't make the food not kosher. But the fact that he used the food as an act of worship, that changes things, right? So that's part of what we're dealing with here. But what about the fact, here's the next question though. Let's say there are some Reiki practitioners. We're arguing in this, and I can tell you, I only give a shiur on a topic that I have experience with, so I did my research. Let me just put it that way. I didn't just read books. I understand what Reiki is, and I did not learn it as an act of worship in any way. I didn't hear those words at all. It's not an act of worship. In fact, I heard it being called not energy healing, but energy relaxation. And it was just meant as a method of helping people and their energy to find wholeness and peace. But what if it is true? Let's say I wanted to practice Reiki. And I'm doing this Reiki, and I see it just as a relaxation technique. But other people are doing the exact same thing, and for them it is worship. So does that make it idolatrous? Because I'm doing something that they do as idolatry, but I'm doing it as relaxation. So this, we come, let's turn back to the front page. Page one, not the front page, but the inside cover, so to speak. This is an important issue that is important to recognize. And be aware. So Let's learn some Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law when it comes to Hilchot Avodah Zarah. This is where I really had to go to understand, is Reiki okay or not? So there's an important principle in Jewish law. This is in Yerei Deah, Siman Kuf Mem Heh, 145 in the code of Jewish law. Let's just read the first couple of lines. It writes, the Mechaber says, Kol she'ein bo tefisas yad adam v'lo asau adam, anything that wasn't made by a person, meaning like not a statue, Afal pisha nevad, even though some people worship it, right, this is on page 1, top source page 1, even though some people worship it, hare ze mutar behana, you can't get benefit. Normally we can't get benefit from idolatry. If something's worshipped as an idol, you can't benefit from it, right? But if it's a natural thing, right, he gives an example. Lefikach, hamishtacha ve'lahar. Let's say some people worship a mountain. Someone worships the Hollywood Hills, right? Someone's worshiping it. That makes sense. Why not worship the Hollywood Hills? Yeah, it's famous. So does that mean I can't go on a hike in Runyon Canyon? Because this is a god to some people? That wouldn't be fair. Just because there are people that, I mean, I don't know if there are, but if there were people that worship the Hollywood Hills, or Hollywood in general, no, that means I can't watch a movie? Maybe. No, I'm joking. So it says, Lo Nesar, it means it's not forbidden. Afila Avnei Harsh Nidaku, even the rocks of the mountain. V'adayin Heba Makoma, they're still there in the mountain. It does not become forbidden. Just because some people worship it doesn't forbid the whole thing. In the next piece, Kuf Nunhe, there was a typo there, it's Kuf Nunhe, 155. He says, if someone who's not Jewish comes to heal you with like an incantation, mutar, you're allowed to receive healing from them. Just because they're not Jewish doesn't mean they can't heal you. V'hu shalo yada shemazkir shem avodas kochavim. Because as long as you don't know that for sure they are trying to use some kind of idolatrous incantation to heal you. As long as you don't know, obviously if you know they're healing you with idolatrous phrases, then you can't. But if you don't know, you can. The reason it gives is if you want to know the source, on page 2, this Shas Tshuvas B'Tzeil Chachma, he gives the reason there is because if you would think that it's idolatrous and then you get healed, it's going to lead you to want to become idolatrous because you're like, wow, it works. So then it's forbidden. If you don't know and you don't think it's idolatrous, and as far as you know, it's neutral, it's permissible. So how does this apply to Reiki? If you turn now to page 18. Sorry, I know we're jumping all around, but there was no way to do this in paper. If this was on an iPad, that's the next generation of shiurim in a week. They should have an iPad. Just click on the link. We should do that. This is really a modern shul. We should have an iPad, a PowerPoint presentation. We should just be clicking. Okay, next year. So on page 18, this is Rav Sternbach. Rav Sternbach is also not from the modern Orthodox, so let's say it that way, the head of the Eidah Haredis, ultra-Orthodox Yerushalayim, Posek, and we'll read what he says in depth later, but in his tshuva about Reiki, which we'll look at the end, he deals with this issue. What about the fact that some of the people use Reiki for idolatrous and some don't? Does that make the whole thing forbidden? So look what he says there. This is from my book. I have a little squiggly on it. He quotes the Shulchan Aruch we just learned, and he says, "Mihu, mashe ma'aminim she'energia hu elohut." The fact that they believe it's some kind of God, "Ein ze osher litrapos be'energia olamit." It does not forbid others from being healed through universal energy. Mirofim b'nei brit hasivurim she'yesh energia olamit, from Jews who believe that there is this energy. But they believe it's just a power that God created, right? When God created the world, they know that it can't do anything on its own, this energy. It's just something that God created. So the fact that some people worship it doesn't mean others who understand it in a more traditional manner can't. And he puts in the parentheses there, I love this. He says, some people worship the sun. That doesn't mean we can't benefit from the sun. It's not telling us that we have to heal from the sun. Oh, I can't go in the sun because there's some Zoroastrians or something that worship the sun. So therefore, I'm going to create my religion that I have to, like, you know, could you imagine? Oh, the firmer people put on the higher levels of sunblock, you know? Oh, you're so firm? I put on 70. Oh, I'm so firm? I wear sunglasses and a burqa. No, we don't say that. We say, okay, they worship the sun. It doesn't mean the sun is now an idolatrous god, because we don't believe it is. So the fact that some people worship it doesn't forbid it for everyone. That's the point about Avodah Zarah. That this is not seen traditionally. Reiki, yes, there are people that have taken it to an extreme. But traditionally, we see Reiki more as a form of energy relaxation. If you see it in that way, that everyone has energy, and we're trying to relax a person, it can make it, it takes away some of the Vodazara idolatrous concerns. Not completely. We'll talk about it more. Don't worry. But this is the argument on the other side. Okay, but what about, there's more issues than idolatry. Going back to page 2. It's like a choose your own adventure. Back to page 2. Actually, page 1. It's the inside cover, so it's page 1 in the bottom there. What about Kishuv? Kishuv is magic. We're not allowed to do magic. Is it some kind of magical incantation, some kind of magical, mystical thing that's happening that's curing people? That would be a problem. So the Gemara says, this is Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the bottom of page 1 there, HaMechashef, the witchcraft, sorcery, is HaOse Maise Chayev V'lo Ochez Es HaInayim. If they do something, it's forbidden. But if it's just something that, you know, is trickery, so to speak, it's not forbidden. So what do we mean by this? In other words, because energy healing is inexplicable, it defies nature, so maybe it's magic. But here's the issue with Kishuv. This is really, this Ramban here, on the top of page 2, the Ramban al Torah, he basically explains, you have it there, put it in Hebrew and in English, that the problem, the reason the rabbis, the Torah, didn't like magic is because it's trying to undermine God's creation. And we're not supposed to undermine God's creation. Olam k'minhago noheg, as the Ramban says, we're supposed to leave creation alone. Doesn't mean we can't make the world a better place and come up with medical, scientific strategies. In fact, the Meiri, in this topic, talks about cloning in the 13th century and why that would be allowed, but magic's not allowed. I'll show you. Look at this source here. The second source on page 2, talking about magic, in our exact issue, he says, Kol shehu naseh befu'ula, if something's done with an action, tivit, that's natural, eino bechlal shafi. That's not the prohibition of magic. It's natural. Afilo yado lebro b'riyot yafot shelo mizivug hamin. Even if you could create a human, not from human intercourse, but you could somehow create a person, k'moshe no da b'sifrei ha-teva, as is known in the science books that you could do it. I don't know what he was talking about, because today it's true. I mean, we have such thing as cloning, and there's such ways of making people without necessarily having intercourse. But he's saying they knew this in the 13th century. He says, that's fine. That's not magic. That's not prohibited, because it's naturally possible. She'ena davar nimna. It's not. We know that it's not impossible. Rishayim lasos. Then you could do it. If it's naturally, shekol shehu tivi, eino b'chal kishuv. Anything that is natural is not considered magic. So, if there's no incantations, there's no invocation of angels or any rituals, you can argue that it's not considered a prohibition of magic because it's a natural process, even if you don't fully understand it. And also people can learn it. One more issue, and then we'll begin to wrap up. I'll give you some of the summaries. The last issue is Darkei HaMori. There's another prohibition. Obviously, Avodah Zarah is the worst thing. Avodah Zarah, idol worship, you have to rather die than do idol worship. But there is a prohibition of going in the Amorite ways. The Torah tells us, this is now still on page 2 in the middle of the page, K'maisa Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo tasu. K'maisa Eretz Kanan asher anim mivyizchem shama lo sasu v'chusehem lo selechem. You cannot follow in the ways of the Egyptians, the Canaanites, and in the verse in Shemos, there's also the Malchei HaEmori, Lo Shetachem Elohim. You can't bow down to them, you can't follow in their ways. And so it's called, became a category in Jewish law of Amorite practices. What's the prohibition? Because this is a lot of people say, no, but doing Reiki, in fact, a lot of people see that what Rabbi Soloveitchik said is, no, what he was saying was Darkei HaMori. It's behaving in sort of like non-Jewish customs that is part of their religion. We shouldn't be following that. The Ran here, basically, if you see the third to bottom source on page 2, he basically says what the issue is. Just to save time, we'll just read that one. He says, because the principle is, Kol davar sheyesh bo mishum refuah. That's what the Talmud says there on the top in Shabbos. Anything that is actually healing, ein bo mishum darkei HaMori. That's not considered prohibition darkei HaMori. So you can't be prohibited to follow the non-Jewish practices if it's actually for healing, as long as it's not idolatrous. So the Ron says, even though we don't understand how it works, shari, it's allowed. We don't need to understand how it works, just that it works, right? As long as we have, if it works for healing, then it's not darchei amor. It's not prohibited because it has a rational reason. The question though becomes, how well does it have to work? This becomes one of the biggest bones of contention between these books, which I'll explain right now. Turn to page 15. Sorry that we're doing so much. Someone's jumping around again, but it's kind of fun also, no? All right, page 15. This is the Aruch HaShulchan, one of the most important late rabbinic legal works about 100 years ago. Aruch HaShulchan, page 15, on the left-hand side there. On yours, does it have a squiggly line on the left side?
Yeah.
You have it, right? Okay, because this is my original. I don't know if you remember what I put on here, what I put in the copies. So let's just read this squiggly line, and I promise we're just about done, but I'm trying to give you the whole picture in a very complete way, and then we'll discuss. So he says, we have this principle. If something's for the sake of healing, it's not prohibited as darkei amor. Kelomar, he says, shenit amet hanisayon shemo'il. Shenit amet, from the word like emet, it's become validated, hanisayon, through tests, shemo'il, that it works. If we can see that this empirically is helpful, then just because it's a non-Jewish thing does not mean it's forbidden. Eimu mishum darkei amori, ve'elu nit amet behem hanisayon, if it has been proven, this is what the Rambam said, Maimonides, Rehushi Yomer, Arofim, as long as the doctors say, Shehu Mo'il, that it works. Kolomar, Shetamit Etzlam and Esayon Shemo'il, they see that it works, the doctors. The Kol Shekein B'Mashe Arofim Notnim Refuot Tiviot Alpi Chachmat Refuot Demutter, that they can show why it works. Aval, Ha'ose Maisa She'embo Refuot Tivit, but if we do something that has no healing, natural healing powers, V'gam and Esayon Lo Etantu, and also through tests, we can't see that it's validated. Aser, we can't do it. Af bechol, even if it's not a violation of Shabbos or eating non-kosher food, whatever it is, you can't do it. Mishum darchei amori. Amna, mine lachashim, certain incantations that they would say, as long as they're not idolatrous. Kivan she'ein behem ma'isah, since there's no action. Belvach lo yiyu min lachashi avodas kochavim. V'chein otam she'barku, enam mo'ilim. Aser, if you see that it can't work, then you shouldn't do it, but otherwise it's actually not problematic to even have some sort of incantations. The question really becomes, though, how much proof do you need? How validated? So in this book, he has a whole section of studies that have shown how energy healing makes a difference, heals wounds, and when tested against fake Reiki or other treatments, how it's helped people. Whereas other books argue that all those studies have not been replicated, and they were problematic studies. So there's a big debate. There's also a debate about how much proof do you need. So for example, in this book, he'll argue, well, Chazal, the rabbi, said if something's done three times, it's that's enough. If it worked three times. Others say, no, it has to work the majority of the time, the vast majority of the time. How much do you need? I'll tell you my opinion about this, because this is a big debate. I don't think that you can prove that Reiki or energy healing actually heals wounds. If someone comes in with a broken leg to the emergency room and the doctors are busy, I don't think the best energy healer can fix that broken leg with their hands by energy healing. But what some studies have shown, and I have that, I can share them with you, what studies have shown is the impact that it can have on people's calmness, on their stress, on their blood pressure, on their affect. It can actually impact people's feelings and emotions and ability to cope. And that's valid. If we're not saying here that this is some kind of miraculous healing intervention, but it's a way to help people, whether it's coping with long bed rests in a hospital, or anxiety at the end of life, or anxiety at any time in life, or anxiety of being in the hospital, or depression or grief, and it's just that it's help assistance with coping, it's a different discussion, right? It's not that's what we're talking about. And those studies have shown to just lower blood pressure, help deal with stress. This is actually what Rav Asher Weiss writes. If you turn to page 19, He also wrote about this. And this actually I found funny when I read this tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss, the Rav of Shari Tzedek Medical Center, and many more things, the rabbi that I call with the most challenging medical questions that we have. He allows it. He allows energy healing. This might actually give you a hint already where I'm going with this, because when I have difficult questions, I ask him. He has told me, and he has published, that he believes energy healing is permissible when it's done in these ways. So look at what he writes here, because it's a perfect, it goes very well with what Rav Soloveitchik said about karate and it being, the bowing being stupid. So look at what he writes. Let's just read this first paragraph on the bottom of 19. He says, Hine, ma'alas kavodo lo shaladati. They asked him if they could do energy healing, right? So he says, you didn't ask me, b'inyan tiv kolana. You didn't ask me if it's good. Ube'eze midah ha'davarim mo'ilim, or how well it works. Ule'dati rova davarim shamon ha'am nohet ma'achareihem heim divrei shtus v'hevem. You know what, actually? I think this a lot of this alternative medicine, I think it's really actually ridiculous. But now, remember the Rav said before, things that are shtus v'hevel shouldn't do it. Rav Asher Weiss has a different perspective. He says, I love this line, ach, ha'torah lo astra lishtatutus. The Torah never forbid it, never forbade shtuyot. Ulanias daiti ein b'chol eila isra kosher. There's no prohibition of these interventions. To the shitas ha'metaplim, the people that do it, medubra b'tipo ha'mushtat al darchei ha'teva. They're doing something that's totally natural. Hagufani v'nafshi, it's emotional, physical. V'lo b'inyanei ha'segula askina. We're not talking about some kind of mystical practices. V'chol davar sheyesh bo refua, ein bo mishum darchei ha'mori, as we saw in the Gemara there. It's a natural thing they're doing. It's not something that they're trying to do some kind of mystical incantation. Therefore, it's not idolatrous. It's not Darchei Amori. And therefore, you come to the conclusion. Now I'll show you what, if you turn to page 14 in this book, now I'll show you Rav Smirla's answer, his conclusion. I'll show you others' conclusion in a second. He concludes, based on what we've discussed, his conclusion here, he has two conclusions, two different topics, but his first conclusion here on page 14, he says, after this discussion, you see, standard hands-on healing practices do not involve any aspects of idolatry, sorcery, or Darchei Amori. None of those three things. One may practice or benefit from such therapies as long as you can do it, but the practitioner does not believe that the chi is a deity. If the practitioner doing it for you believes that they are worshiping it in some way, that's a problem. That we saw in that Shulchan Aruch piece in Kuf Nun Hei. And number two, the practitioner does not blend his practice with prohibited elements. There's no prohibited elements being involved with it at all whatsoever. Remember, these symbols, the way I understand them, the practitioner's symbols, they are kavanah, they're intentions. They're trying to understand, okay, I'm doing this to help for healing. I'm doing this for a calmness. My intention for you is that you should feel wholeness. You should feel comfort in your grief. They're intentions. They're not worship. They're not symbols of godliness. Also, the smicha, this fact that it's passed on, some people, you know, we saw in Rav Taub's book, he writes it, oh, it's easy, obviously, that's idol worship, because you see there's a mystical ceremony happening. But the way I understand it is that it's empowerment. It's the teacher saying, okay, you can do this, you can help people relax, I'm empowering you. It's that sense of, that's the sense of that it is smicha. If you go on page 20, he goes on with his conclusion. But still, it would be forbidden if the practitioner sees it as healing. Page 20, talking directly about Reiki, he says, in summary, there's nothing objectionable in the practice of Reiki. One may be treated by a Reiki practitioner, even if he is not Jewish, and one may learn the Reiki system of healing. However, due to the fact that some people are under the false impression that Reiki stems from idolatrous practices, it's recommended that Jewish practitioners not refer to their practice as Reiki and not use its symbols so that they will not appear to be engaged in forbidden behavior. Like I said, we sometimes call it energy relaxation. This ruling applies only to the practice of traditional Reiki. However, should a practitioner incorporate the invocation of angels or any other such prohibited ritual into his Reiki practice, one may not be healed by him. It's always ideal when possible to use a God-fearing Jewish practitioner who received halachic endorsement on all aspects of his practice from a knowledgeable and competent rabbi. So that's his conclusion. So we saw some who said, this is absolutely horrible. We see him who, I've seen another extreme, who's saying it's almost always permissible. He then does something that also angered some people. Remember, one of the things that we read about why it is forbidden is because there's no source in Judaism for this. Where'd you get this from? You're copying other systems. Why? We have our own religion. We don't need to come up with these New Age healing practices. So he dedicates a whole section. We don't need to read it all right now. I'll just show you an example. It's the next page right here on this page. To trying to find sources in Torah literature that no, there is such a thing as energy healing. He has from the Ramban. The Ramban quotes the verse when it says, when Leah says about Bilhah, that she's giving birth to children for her. She says, she will give birth on my knees, and I too will be built through her. So the Ramban says there, now I'm going to page 21. We won't read all this, but I just have it here for you. That she will give birth on my knees, and I will draw energy from her. For the word Ivaneh, I will be built, is an expression of drawing energy. The Hebrew there is Hamshacha Vatsilut Koach. Right? It's an expression of drawing energy. The process is similar to what Hashem told Moshe. And he argues, if you read this whole piece, says there's a fundamental principle regarding the placing of hands. Throughout Judaism, we see, you know, the idea of placing hands, like giving smicha, or like Moshe did to Yeshua, like parents do to their children. This was the purpose of leaning the hands upon the heads of the sacrifice, korbanot. And this was also the purpose of Aaron HaKohen, raising his hands towards the nation, Birkat Kohanim, that there's this energy that goes to the hands. He says, you know, that there's an energy that comes to our hands. He quotes from other sources here. You see on this next page, you see all these sources he gives, that someone blesses someone, they should put their hands over their heads, that this how somehow proves that, oh, see, we had it also in Judaism, the idea of placing hands. So let me just make three final points that I want to share with you. And then open up for discussion, we'll conclude because I'm a little over time. These were sort of extremes on both sides. I think if you turn to page 16, Sternbach, I felt. I mean, this was my bias. I felt that when I showed you these different books, they're in a polemical war with each other. Sometimes when someone gets in a polemic, they get very dedicated to proving their point. Let's put it that way. They want to prove their point. So they get sometimes a little bit extreme in their position and lack some nuance. I think, let me just read, show you what a traditional, well-accepted posek today, this just came out also in the past couple of years, Rav Sternbach in Yerushalayim, major posek in Israel, in his most recently published Shas and Tshuvas. I'll show you what he says about it. I find this to be like kind of like a middle view, and one that I find compelling, and then I just want to make two last points after this. So on page 16, Rav Sternbach writes his tshuva about refua alternativit, but it's really about energy healing, as he says, about this Reiki. So he writes, Nechleku chachmei zmanenu odot shitot refua alternativit. There's a difference of opinion. It's a machlokas, right? This is page 16. Shabba mi'ovdei avodah zara mi'hodu v'sin, this Chinese healing that comes from idolatrous practices, v'niz pashit etzel ha-charedi b'eretz Yisrael v'chul. It has spread amongst the Charedim in Israel and Chutz La'aretz v'zman acharon, in the recent years. Yesh osrim l'fuot b'shita le'alot v'yesh matirin. Some allow it, some forbid it. So go up to the next column, he says, v'ani, in the top left, Any more bein lahatir bein lasur. I don't want to say if it's usur, forbidden. I don't want to say if it's mutter. Rak bakashi shak upon him. I just ask one thing. Otam shematapli mishitot arafu alternativit yitzlu shalat b'marpe sharafu ahi hakol alpi derech hateva bilvad v'nevairatam. I'll explain. But make sure that they don't explain it to be some kind of a mystical thing. Just say like I said, it's just calming. It's meant to, you know, help your energy feel relaxed. Don't make it into anything spiritual. I have another thing to add to it, but he says, well, you know, the truth is, the majority of the stuff here is stuff that we've said. He says, Mikomakum nitkabla tzlena she'enze mukach klal she'zeo shinu migene v'teva. This is not necessarily something that's meant to be spiritual and mystical. And he says, if it's meant as a physical intervention, he says, kol she'etzalat tzibur lo nitkabel kein, that it had, even though they thought it was mystical, as long as we don't, nir etzleinu kishinui megeder teva zeu bechlal iser kishin. If we would think that it is some kind of a mystical intervention, it's kishuv. It would then definitely be a problem. But as long as we don't think that, as long as we think that it's, he writes here, rak the devarenu she'ena lahatir rak refut she'muvan mesechla she'ulai zeu koch teva lo shayach le'asur mishum darkim. As long as we see that it is natural and not mystical. One more thing there's a side point, just I'll point it out. I'm not going to go into it in depth right now, but there's an interesting discussion. From those who accept this as being allowed, there's an interesting question. We know when it comes to medicine, going to a doctor, a dentist, a doctor, you know, even though, you know, there's no, we generally, we're not concerned about man touching a male doctor and a female patient, a female doctor and a male patient. If it's a medical practice, we understand that this is a medical intervention. It's something that's done as part of one's profession. And as a professional working in their office, it's something that's a normal part of practice, that men treat women, women treat men. What would Poskim say about a man providing Reiki for a woman, or a woman providing Reiki for a man? So I found this article by this Dr. Katz of Beit Shemesh in Tchumim. This is on page 23 here. And he basically goes through reasons why he thinks energy healing is different than medicine. You know, in medicine, you know, first of all, a doctor, the treatment is probably shorter. And you're in a medical professional practice, and the doctor's touch is more like checking, it's examining, it's not the actual treatment itself. There's more restrictions. The doctor can provide known, scientifically proven therapy. So it's more likely, he argues, that touching opposite gender is problematic when it comes to Reiki. As opposed to healing. I found it interesting the way he writes it on page 25, his summary. The way he summarizes this, should a man provide it for women? He says, Ratzui shekol tipul refu'i mashlim yinatein al yidei gever legever, al yidei isha leisha. It should be man to man, woman to woman. Bet kasher ein benimsa mitapel mitapelet ben oto amin. But what if you don't have someone available? V'yesh seva mashmaoti, and the person is really suffering, and they need Reiki? Yitachen shenitein lo hakel, there could be room for a leniency. Gam az, however, even then, you should follow these three tonight. One, meduber betipul sheyesh rayot tovot leiluto. You have to be doing something that you know is beneficial. We have to know that something actually helps. We can see that they'll actually calm them. Two, medubar betipul shenir beofen barur ketipul refui. It's done. Clearly, and it looks like it is a medical practice. Whom it's kayem and mosad refuit, being done in a medical office. Ulo tosefet hamiviot kiba, and not done with things that add to the physical sense of closeness, or kirva kmo musika, rechot like smells, or lavusha eno halom, or inappropriate clothing, and finally medubar b'matzavo metabel torud b'avodato in chashashi avol deavera, and the professional is actually busy at work. So that was the last point. There was just one last point I wanted to make. One last thing, and then I'll summarize. And the truth is, we won't read it. The last two sources, page 26 and 27, I won't read them inside. But it's Rav Usher Weiss and Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. And they made the point that all of these interventions should always be seen as being complementary. They're something that someone can engage in, but they do not replace traditional medicine. That's where it gets dangerous. Okay, if someone's going into surgery, and in pre-op, they want someone to help them feel calm, what's bad about that? If they want to not do surgery because they'd rather have someone provide Reiki so that they can think that's going to cure them, then it becomes problematic. This book, for example, he writes at the beginning, I'm not trying to replace traditional medicine. This is not a replacement. But he doesn't emphasize this point. He doesn't emphasize the point that it's not... This has to be seen only as something that's complementary. as long as it's seen as something in addition, okay, we believe in medicine, we believe in traditional medicine, we try, we do it. And in addition, we can try, these are things that are meant to just help people feel a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more calm, a little bit at ease. Then it's okay. But not as any, God forbid, in any way to challenge modern medicine, replace it. That's where it gets scary. That's where some of the extremes come, where it's like, oh, modern medicine, like vaccinations, and they're like, oh, we don't really need that. We have other segulas and things we can do. Then it becomes a really big problem. So what did we say? What did I say? Can they practice? I'm sorry, we went way over time. I apologize. We'll stop it. We'll stop right after this. And then if you want to talk, I'll stay to talk, but I don't keep you longer. What did I say to our chaplain, who's a Reiki master, who wants to provide Reiki to patients at our hospital? And did I myself become a Reiki practitioner? I'll tell you next week. No. After doing this research, after speaking to Rav Asher Weiss and seeing this, we felt as long as it is taught, not as Reiki energy healing, but as Reiki energy relaxation, as a technique that people can feel they have gone a little bit further to help them feel relaxed and calm, and they're doing everything they can to feel at peace and whole and ready for what they're dealing with, as a supplement, as something that they are requesting on their own. We now have a whole policy about it. They request it on their own, and they're not forced with this, and they're only done when they're comfortable, and it not necessarily touching them, but it can be done slightly above the skin. That we do provide it, and now we do provide it. That Reiki master of our chaplains then trained almost all of our chaplains to become Reiki practitioners. And I will admit before you, my friends, that I also received the training. I felt like I at least have to know what we're talking about. I don't really spend much time doing it, although I've helped my kids fall asleep sometimes at night by doing it. But I felt like I had to know what it really is. And I see that as long as it's seen, this is exactly what Rav Schermbach said, or what Rav Asher Weiss said, as long as it's seen as something that is just trying to help people, help them feel relaxed. It's a natural thing. It's a logical thing that people have energy and auras that we're just trying to help it to feel calm, help them to kind of feel control over it. Then it's something that can be beneficial. I've seen it be beneficial in terms of calming people. And when done with that intention, not as a mystical, spiritual, religious practice, can be something that's beneficial. And I think that we have yeshal mi lismoch, we have what to rely on, that when done in this careful manner, not replacing medicine, it can be something that is beneficial and is permissible. Thank you all for coming, and if you have any comments, if people need to leave, I understand.